It's Friday, time for another podcast.
On Chapter 107, we travel to Lausanne, where we were treated to a gourmet meal at Clément, artisan culinaire.
Yeah, what she said. We also made it to the vineyard, which supplies Clément with some of his wines, Clos de Bray. This is Jeff and Julie moved to France during a global pandemic. Well, isn't it nice that we're finally getting some real spring?
Yeah, well, it's rained a ton. I think the rainfall is up 12% over last year.
You know, I was trying to find whether there were records set, but I really couldn't. But you know what? That would not surprise me in the least.
Yeah, there were lots of rivers that flooded. Like our Lut River is quite spectacularly high.
Yeah, even though it's regulated, though. That's the thing, right?
Yes, so. But the Seine overflowed, and that's always a big problem. We're now looking at two straight days of sunshine and above 15 degree weather.
And honestly, we bump into people when we're walking, and everyone's saying the same thing. What are we going to do with two straight days of sunshine? it's literally been, I mean, we've had a few breaks through the winter, but since November, it's been 5 months of Vancouver.
It's been quite damp and dark. But you know, yesterday I went into town, and I can't tell you how many lawnmowers I heard.
Well, here's the thing: with all the rain, and then you add the sunshine in, I have been out there with the whippersnipper. I'm carving through like a foot of grass, and it's growing like, you know, it's growing like gangbusters right now. So you have to get out while you can. And then there's more rain on the way, a little bit, right? So
a
you
want
to
yeah.
try. And get as much. I'm cutting grass after we're done here today.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be done. The place looks like a rainforest around here.
It's very lush.
Very lush.
And I unfortunately did not trim the roses this past winter, and now they're starting to bloom. So I'll trim them another time. It's too late now.
Well, they will grab you and pull you into them.
Yeah.
Our roses are insane.
They're pretty aggressive.
Like, Julie used to kill them on a regular basis in Canada, and she can't kill them here,
yeah.
even if you try.
That was my nickname, Rose Killer.
Yeah. By the way, victory is mine. So I broke a lens on my, and you know what? You've probably noticed some of the crappy photos I've been taking for the Facebook page. At Jeff and Julie moved to France.
Is that because of the lens?
Well, anytime you see that light refraction that I've kept a few of them in, but like I cracked the little lens cap on the back of the iPhone.
Right.
And you know, we stupidly paid for insurance with Orange. And it's like, it's an insane amount of money. We'll probably end up canceling it, you know. And so I cracked this. I took it in there to them, and they said, oh, you have to fill out this form, and then you have to go to this website, then you have to mail your camera.
And you did go to the website.
Oh, yeah. And then we went to the website, and it was closed.
Yeah.
Or broken or something.
Something. Yeah, you couldn't register.
In.
No, you couldn't log in or register your phone.
So then I'm starting to think, wait a minute. There's got to be a way to fix this on my own. So sure enough, I go to YouTube. I say, how to fix a lens on an iPhone 12. Boom. There are about 10 different videos. It's an absolute breeze. All you need is a pair of tweezers and a hair blower. And so then I go to Amazon and I order the two lenses. I only needed to replace one. I order two lenses for $5. And, you know, I mean,
euros. Put that sharp instrument away.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
But in the time that I went and ran an errand, I came back and you'd fixed your phone.
Yeah, I know. It took me 10 minutes and $5. Yes. Yes. Oh, geez.
So, you know what? And if you had gone the insurance route?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the other thing. So what they wanted us to do is then, so had I been able to log on to the website, then what? They send me a package. I put the phone in the package. And then they might just send a new phone That's what we were told.
Well, and then you had to go to Orange to go pick up a loaner phone.
A loaner phone. And then this was going to take a month or so. And then now you're... So what if they sent a new phone? Then now you're what? Re-downloading, you know, all your apps and all that stuff. Look, I'll just take the hit, the $5 hit. Narrows, and we'll call it a day. And it was easy, and it looks great. Looks exactly the same.
Have you tested it?
Yeah, I've tested it. And you know what? The other thing is, you don't have to take your phone apart. All you need to do is fiddle around with the actual where your little lens is cracked. Get rid of the glass, heat it. Get rid of the previous adhesive.
Yeah.
Put the new one on. Bob's your uncle. Molly's your aunt.
Perfect.
You're off. You're off to the races.
Perfect.
I know, it's great. So we got that done. You also. Got an interesting bit of correspondence after 6 or 7 months.
Oh, well, our carte de séjour, our titre de séjour. So we're in a situation where we need to renew them on a yearly basis. And there are all kinds of guidelines. We've talked about this before. Like, you can't do it too early. You can't do it too late.
This is our residency card.
Yeah, it's to prove that you are allowed to be in this country. And so I do both yours and mine online. It's relatively easy now. It's our third go. So, you know, it's
well,
compiling.
It's easy if you give the right information, I guess.
Yeah. Yes. But you compile all your documents and all of your, you know, statements and all, you know, everything, so that an inspector can review it. Right now, I have my official card has expired, and so has yours.
Mm-hmm.
It expired at the beginning of February, and we both received a letter saying that we're giving you an extension.
Prolongation.
That's right. Yours, I believe, is until May.
Yeah.
Mine is until June. So, you know, picture that. So if our cards keep expiring in February and we have to apply in October to get our new card, if I don't get my card until June, so that's July, August, September, October, 5 months. So then
I until
have to
you start reapplying.
Yeah.
And so the other day, Julie gets a notice in the mail. Was it the mail? No.
No. It was an email.
Email. Mm-hmm. But hang on. So we applied on November 20th, I
mm-hmm.
think,
yeah.
In that area, 2023, for the February deadline.
Yeah.
On March the whatever the hell it was, 10th or 11th or 12th, they send you a note and that says, oh, by the way, you sent us the incorrect year for one of your documents. So let me get this straight. November, December, January, February, March. It took you 4 months to figure that out? Oh, my God. I mean,
yeah. I don't know. You know what? I don't know why it takes so long. And I guess all the other applications don't come into play. They have to, you know, analyze this as though it's a fresh application. And it just takes, in my opinion, way too long, because we, you know, our dossier is impeccable. You know, we own a property here. We're, you know,
we're retired. We're not
right.
Seeking work. And here's the interesting thing. So they tell you that you need to get these, if it's not here in time, a prolongation, so that you can travel. Well, I didn't have a prolongation when I went back to Canada. And I just thought, you know what? No one ever asks us for the carte de séjour at the border,
mm-hmm.
so I'm going to gamble. Now, as it turns out, it came in while I was in Canada.
Yes.
And so you sent it to me. I had it printed up. So mm-hmm. I did have it with me.
Yeah.
But sure enough, I came back and it was just like, boom, boom, stamp. You know, you have a passport. I'm fine. So you technically, they say that you really need one to be able to travel even within Europe. But hell with it. No one checks at the border. I just still don't even know why this card exists.
And I think it's because they get 225
yeah.
euros per person
yeah.
Every year.
Every year. That's the whole reason. And they're so backlogged right now that Julie's right. When she finally receives her card, there'll be about 4 or 5 months.
Get a little break.
And then, boom, she's going to be reapplying again. Anyway, so that's that. It's just the most ridiculous thing. And I'm telling you, these carte de séjours, they must employ thousands of people, most of whom appear to be incompetent.
Yeah. When you meet them in person, they're, well, the ones that we've met are actually quite lovely and quite helpful. But, you know, the online system definitely needs an upgrade.
Time now for another Paris 2024 Olympic update.
So a press conference was held regarding the Olympics, and it has to do with the Seine River. Now, the Seine runs through the heart of Paris, and it's known as being one of the most romantic rivers. And it will also be where the opening ceremonies will be held.
And that is still on, as far as we know. And I hope that hangs in there. That's probably the only thing I'm going to watch at of the Olympics is that. I really want to watch that.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think it's going to be spectacular. And then there are two events that are supposed to be held in the river. There's the open water swimming event and the triathlon. So
where's the rowing going to be done? Well, I guess on a...
I'm not sure.
I guess the rowing... Yeah, I guess the rowing would have to... There wouldn't be a current, so it would have to be a lake or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, but there's a problem.
Oh, yeah.
Oof. Because they've been trying to clean up that river. One of the reasons that France got, or Paris got, the Olympic bid was that they tied it to cleaning up and getting green and you know, making the Seine River swimmable for the citizenry. And they were hopeful that by 2025, certain sections of the Seine River would be swimmable, like it was back in 1900.
I just don't know how you do that. It's a moving current. How can you clean up one area? I mean, I can understand it on a lake, but with a moving current, all the new water's coming in, the new filthy water. And
the biggest problem is that the sewage system is ancient and is not effective. And when there's heavy rain, which happens often.
And certainly has recently.
There's overflow. So they they've got a lot of little fecal matter in.
Okay. And there are some athletes that are complaining about this, right?
Yeah, it's the Brazil. There's some Brazilians that are complaining about this. But, you know, pollution in open water has been an issue at so many different Olympics because we live in the world that we live in right now, which is poopy, right? And so, you know, back in Tokyo, same thing. Swimmers were you know, complaining that it was polluted. It's very, very, it's a very difficult problem to solve. But they're thinking that the water will test well before the Olympics. There's no plan B for those events.
The swimming events.
There's no for the open water and for the triathlon. There's no plan B. I mean, they could turn the triathlon into a duathlon with just two events and skip the swimming leg. Some athletes don't care. They know that's part of the deal. They're going to be swimming in water that's less than perfect, but it's part of the sport that they chose.
So yeah, I mean,
they're being troopers.
And here's the other thing. If they're triathletes, that's what they do, and every place is going to be different and somewhat polluted because it's always in, you know, nature's world.
Yes. Well, you know, they did a test run back in August of last year. They were going to hold an event, and it got canceled because the water was too polluted.
Now, the other thing is, it's more likely to be overflowing at this time of the year than in July when the Olympics are actually happening. It's typically a drier period of time. So, we'll have to follow this one. But
yeah.
And maybe they're just going to have to say, okay, those that don't want to participate, well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, or they're thinking maybe they move the event off by a few days. Not that a few days will make that much of a difference. So I don't know. But it's been 100 years since it's been illegal to swim in the Seine River.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
It is illegal, yeah, since 1923.
Huh.
Yeah. So you know, hopefully everyone's dream of cleaning it up and making it swimmable for the Parisians will come true. But right now they're running through, they're going through a little bit of a rough patch.
You know what I've noticed is our Olympic updates lately and probably right up until July are about problems. And because they're starting to surface, we're getting very close to the actual dates.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're running into, and as do all Olympics, it's a mammoth thing to organize and pull off.
Yes.
So this is all you're going to be probably hearing, you know, the things that aren't working. And so there's the latest.
Yes. And, you know, little fun fact, the cleanest river in France is close to us. It's not the Lot.
Wow. Cajon?
Yes.
Yeah, eh?
Yeah. And the theme of rivers brings me to the French phrase of the day.
Okay, let me get my glasses on. Okay, go ahead, Julie. Today's French phrase of the day.
Ne changez pas de cheval au milieu de la rivière.
Oh, don't change your horse in the middle of the river.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you know who spoke those wise words?
Napoleon?
No, he was American.
This guy here?
Yep. This is a translation. The original was Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, he came up with this one, huh?
He penned that, yes. So, do you get the sense of it?
Of course. Like, it's, if you're going to change your horse, don't do it where it's the most dangerous spot.
Yeah.
Like before or after you go in the river.
Right.
And this is a metaphor. It could be, you know, anywhere dangerous.
Yeah. Or don't change staff in the middle of chaos. Or don't, those types of things. Anyway, one more time in French. Ne changez pas de cheval au milieu de la rivière.
Don't change your horse in the middle of the river. Not only a fun French phrase of the day, but one where the message could be heeded.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we're getting out of here a little more often now. Like, honestly, when we tell you that it's just been deluge after deluge, and really, you're not going anywhere when it's pouring like that. We're telling the truth. But now, you know, the last couple of weeks, we've had, you know, some windows of opportunity.
Yeah, warmer weather.
Yeah.
And so we like getting out there. And when I read the report about the Bib Gourmand and saw that there were 56 new Bib Gourmand winners or inductees, I looked at our region, which is Nouvelle-Aquitaine, and there was one restaurant that was in the Lot-et-Garonne, and that was Clément Artisan Culinaire.
And this was so cool because we first of all had never been to Lausanne. Is that how you pronounce it?
Lausanne.
And we get there, and it's a charming little town.
Yeah, and the market was there. It was a Saturday. We decided to go on a Saturday, and the little market was set up. We bought a couple of little things before going to lunch. And you noticed right away a beautiful building, and I said, that's where we're eating lunch.
Yeah, that's right. I go, oh, no, look at that one. And it was right along the market street,
yes,
which they had all closed off. And it's the nicest building on the street, a little white stone and everything, just beautiful. I will include a photo on the Facebook page. But, yeah, so we go in there. Since we were one of the first people there, it was kind of wide open. So I took a bunch of pictures of the inside of the restaurant.
And it's so well appointed. The decor is classy, pristine, calming, it's an open kitchen in the back of the restaurant.
Yeah.
So you can see Clément and his brigade, working on the meals. And we'd never been there before. We'd never been to Lausanne. So we were just soaking up the experience. Clément's sister came out. She helps run the restaurant and does the service. And she asked us if we know how it works at this restaurant. And she proceeded to explain that for lunch, it's, you have one choice. You get an appetizer, an entree, and a dessert. But the chef decides based on the market and based on his mood what is going to be prepared that day.
Yeah, so if you don't like that, that's why it's somewhat difficult, because in France there are a lot of things that neither of us eat. And so what we've decided to do, because I think his popularity is going to go through the roof. We lucked out on this one because everything was fish-based, which
yes,
we both like. So But here's what we're going to have to do. Make your reservation probably like a couple of weeks in advance. And then day of, you know, give a call. Well, okay, say, hey, Clément, what do you got going on today? Because, and if it's like, you know, some weird thing.
Yeah.
Like if it's a sheep, what is that? Neither of us eat? Not sheep, but.
You don't like lamb.
Lamb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, but, check, please. No, yeah. We're not coming.
Yeah. But, you know, I think he has a propensity to migrate towards the fish. And for dinner, there are three or four options.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
So, you know, you'll always find something on the menu. And so, you know, part of the Bibb experience is you get fantastic food, and it was delicious.
And it was very inexpensive.
Well, for the quality, the price quality is just an incredible value.
And again, from last week, if you remember, Julie was listing some of the criteria for the Bibb Gourmand accreditation, and one of them is price, and so it had to be under 40. Well, it ended up being under 30, wasn't it? Wasn't it $25?
For lunch, I think the lunch menu is €25.
And it's a three-course thing. Mm-hmm. €25.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it was so cool because, you know, he's an up-and-coming. His name is Clément Papillot, and he's up and coming, but it's been his passion since he was young, and he's still young. He's 29, mm-hmm. but you know, he was apprenticing at the age of 19.
And wasn't it kind of them to let us know where he was apprenticing?
Yes,
because that's also a restaurant that operates in the area.
Well, it's called Auberge du Prieuré, and it's in Moirax, which is about 40 minutes from us. And the chef, Benjamin Tourcel, was Clément's mentor, and they still have a very great relationship. I don't know how long Clément worked with Benjamin, but, you know, clearly he has learnt the craft and is impassioned by what he does. He comes by it honestly because his family, his immediate family, have been involved in the culinary arts in one way or another. His uncle roasts coffee. His brother does pastries. His father-in-law works the land. His father is a boulanger. So, you know, I think food was always a very important part for this family.
Yeah.
So, be
sure to check out the Facebook page at Jeff and Julie Moved to France, because we got some photos of Clément and his sister. They're very proud of their place. And so they should be.
So they should be.
It's just amazing. And they run a beautiful restaurant.
It's great. And, you know, this Bibb Gourmand has only been around since 1997. It's not as old as the Michelin star, per se.
And for them, it's only been around for a week or two, right?
With the restaurant?
No, the Bibb Gourmand classification.
Yes. Oh, yeah. They just got it just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
It was awarded.
Yeah.
So now they're part of, you know, 3,400 restaurants around the world that have that honor, I just think that in the next few months we're going to see that place become very, very
well visited,
well attended.
Yeah. Now, did you find out whether we have any of the Bibb Gourmands in Canada? Because I'd never heard of this until the other week.
So the country with the most Bibb Gourmands, France.
Okay.
Then the U.S. and then Japan. Huh. Canada ranks really down the mm-hmm. list. I think it has 30. And France has 400 plus. And when I was looking online, the majority of them are on the West Coast. So in Vancouver.
Okay.
A few in Toronto. None in Montreal so far.
And Asian restaurants, right?
Yes.
And wasn't that also the case with some of the new Michelin star restaurants that were awarded, even in Toronto,
Yes.
Because there's a lot of different now, you know, the Asian restaurants, there are so many different styles.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Asian covers a broad section of food and spices and, you know, and specialties. But coming up Monday is going to be a big day because now the Bibb Gourmands were released ahead of time, but the Michelin stars are going to be revealed on Monday.
Ah.
And so you will get a list of who's newly nominated, who's getting an additional star,
mm-hmm.
and maybe who is losing their star.
Right. And then those inspectors or whatever they're called. Is that what they're called? Inspectors that go? Then they just pick up and start for 2024 and just go stuff their pie holes for the whole year and get paid for it.
I know you want that job.
Oh, I want that job so badly. But I mean, I wouldn't know what, you know, to look for. And that's the other thing. It's all incognito, right? You know,
it's anonymous, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the chefs don't know that they're being, that they're serving potentially someone who can award them, a bib or a star.
Yeah. And like, I'd blow it for sure. They'd never suspect me because I'd be like, hey, have you got some ketchup for these fries?
Well, and at least you didn't order milk. We ordered a nice bottle of wine.
Well, that's the thing. And so this sort of dovetails into the next part of our adventure. So he features this wine, local wine, from a vineyard called Clos de Bray.
Yes.
Did I say that right?
You did.
Okay.
You did. And he recommended to go with the fish that he was serving. It's called L'Odyssée.
Odyssey.
And it's a Bergerac wine from Le Clos du Bray, which is located in southeast Bergerac.
Yeah.
And we decided it's about, I don't know, what, a 35, 40-minute drive?
Yeah.
So we decided to go visit and see if we could go pick up a couple of bottles of wine. And we were very well received by Loïc Vergniaud. And he and his brother run the operation. And it's been, a family business for six generations.
And you know what was perfect about it is he gave us a little tour of some of the vats and then some of the casks where the wine is being stored. It's a small, I think they have 16 or 12 hectares.
It's 15 hectares.
In fact, 15 hectares. So it's a small operation. And then he took us into their new tasting area, which they're still building. They're planning a beautiful terrace that overlooks their fields, actually, for tasting. And then just with a brief description of the wines, it was just kind of a perfect amount of time for us to kind of get a sense of what they're doing.
Yes.
And then we tried their reds and whites. And I'm telling you, we ended up walking away with quite a few.
Well, and they're organic. Like, there's no pesticides. They do all
bio.
They do all of any of the removals by machine. It's mechanical. And they're very proud of that. And the wine that we particularly like, the L'Odyssée, is aged in an egg-shaped concrete container.
Right.
And the white that we had at Clément's restaurant was a combination Sauvignon,
Semillon,
and Muscadet.
Muscadet.
Yes.
Muscadet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Muscadet. Yeah. And I didn't know this, but Loïc was explaining that it's mandatory in order to be classified as a Bergerac wine to be a blend.
Yeah, and then I asked him, isn't that the same with Bordeaux? Because he didn't know for sure, but he didn't think so, although it's hard to find a Bordeaux red that isn't a blend of some kind.
Right, right. Yeah. So they've experimented with different kinds of wines, and they've planted grapes that are not French per se. Mm-hmm. One of them is from Georgia, like next to Russia, Georgia.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know, but is really the starting place of winemaking.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Like they started making wine 6,000 years B.C.
B.C.?
Yeah.
So 8,000
years.
Some years ago.
Yes.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And so he brought in a varietal called Sapiravie. The logic behind that is if there's drought, which has happened a lot in the summers here in France, these are very drought resistant.
Mm-hmm.
So he's brought in that.
I don't think a drought will matter this year. We've had so much rain. The water table's probably pretty much up to the surface.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to be a big issue this year. But yeah, for sure. And then he's kind of covered off, right? Because when you only have that like because he had a hail incident there
last year. 2023 was not good. Yeah.
Yeah, and a couple of the cepages, the varietals, didn't even make it. They didn't make a bottle of it because it got ruined. So he's, you know, he has to sort of deal with the weather, and as a result, have a few options at his hands.
Yep, and they're the first ones in southwest France to have planted that varietal.
From Georgia.
Yeah, from Georgia.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah. I mean, I can't wait to go back there, take some friends there, because it was a very enjoyable experience.
Yeah, we felt very welcomed. And, you know, again, you know, Loic was so proud and so happy to share his knowledge with us. It was very informative.
And then, of course, it was one of those days where everything was closed that we knew of because we wanted to go for lunch. And so I asked him, I said, you know, can you recommend a restaurant? So after looking up two or three more that were closed, and we all had a laugh. And then he came up with this one. How do you even say this?
Maréchalerie
in Castellonas. And so we go there, and I got to say it, I don't know how they make any money. The food was so good, and it was so inexpensive. I honestly, like, again, three-course meal and 15 euros. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they do it. Anyway, we go in there, and it was just delicious. Castellonas, we've been there before, and it's a nice little town as well.
It's a nice town, and it was market day there.
Yeah, we seem to hit market day a lot, huh?
And it was a quaint, very quaint, and the cuisine was like homey, and delish. I really enjoyed it. Nice soup,
potage, as you say.
Yes. Yeah. No. It was fun.
So while we were there, I noticed something, and I'm going to run this by you. Because I don't think I would have done, I would not have dealt with this well. So it's kind of a Larry David moment for me.
Yeah.
And I think I saw it twice at this restaurant. I think the people next to us did this as well.
Okay.
And it really rubbed me the wrong way. But this far table.
They were behind me.
Yeah. They did it for sure.
Okay.
At the end of the meal.
Yeah.
And it was two women out for lunch.
Uh-huh.
One of them gets up and goes out for a smoke. One of them. There's only two people at the table.
Right.
And she gets up and goes out for a smoke, leaving the other person there to twiddle their thumbs. If somebody does that to me, it's the last time we're going for lunch. I'm just telling you that right now. It's the last time we're going for lunch.
But what if you want to go to the bathroom?
It's different.
Okay. Like,
one's a choice, one's a need. You don't choose. That's like taking a phone call. I mean, unless it's really important, phones go off at the table. Well, off they go.
Right. I know. I get what you're saying. It's not nice to your friend or your mom or whoever
the person's
sitting there.
Person's just sitting there waiting for you to deal with your habit. Yeah, no, it's not right. And by the way, what's another 10 or 15 minutes of waiting for your precious cigarette that you can't have after the meal?
Okay, no, I get your point. But, you know, your telephone situation happened to me at the doctor's office.
What telephone situation?
Talking on the phone in a restaurant. Okay, so I'm sitting down in the waiting room waiting to see the doctor, and this woman who's maybe a meter away from me is on the phone with a girlfriend and speaking very loudly. And I'm not the only one in the waiting room with this with this phone. I'm thinking to myself, that's not right. You shouldn't be in the waiting room on the phone amongst other people. You should be taking your phone
when they can all hear you.
I knew about her girlfriend getting a speeding ticket. She had a 90-euro fine and a three-point deduction. I found out about the streaks in her hair that she has to go back to the because they're too yellow. So she has to go back for a second appointment on Monday.
Okay, but there's one thing there's one thing that's worse.
What?
Remember at Milestones that day? We were at Milestones. We were at Milestones in Guelph, and we're outside, and about two tables from us, these four guys are having a meeting on a speakerphone.
Speakerphone.
I told them to shut it off. Like, I finally said, guys, this isn't your office.
It's not a conference room.
It's not a conference room. Shut it off. And they did, but they were... But I was really mad. You don't have your speakerphone on at a restaurant, period.
Mm.
No?
I think it's incredibly rude. You know, incredibly. There's a time and place for everything. What's up with people? Like, why? Like, think about others, not just yourself.
You know, it's funny. People say, do you find Curb Your Enthusiasm funny? And I go, no, I thought it was a documentary. I just agree with pretty much everything that Larry David says about the annoyances of people. And, you know, like stuff like that. Just it. No wonder I have curly hair. Curls my hair. I mean, you don't like think. Yeah, no,
well,
I mean.
Well, I guess that's why you have the moniker Mr. Happy.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. And soon it's going to be Mr. Euro. If you have your way. That'll do it for Chapter 107. We will have another French adventure waiting for you next Friday on Jeff and Julie Move to France During a Global Pandemic.
Merci, Clément et Loïc.